Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves and everything. It's that time again. It's the Thursday Throwdown. It's the Doc Talk podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, a friend of me in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Dr. Greg Roscoe. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing this in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. I realize an hour goes by quick. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, Doc the Threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And this is going to be the first of two with this great talent you're bringing in. I'll man the boards and talk to you with some comments in 30 minutes.
Mark, thank you very, very much. I think you're right. Should be a great show tonight. I'm doing fine. You know, our show is picking up steam. I get an awful lot of emails and comments, which is good. So I thank you, listeners. You know, Pittsburgh weather, a little bit chilly. We're in the 20s and 30s. Very little snow. It's bright, but it's cold. L.A., Mark, is a little different, I would think. You're not there. You know, as far as what we want to do tonight, I've had a lot of interest, you know, in our cancer program that we've had. Many surgeons talking about different aspects of the human body, about the cancer types, the surgery. We were getting into breast surgery, cancer, who should not get reconstruction. And tonight, I have a very talented gentleman on who is a plastic surgeon. He's in the Western Pennsylvania area, does a tremendous amount of plastic surgery. And we're going to ask him about what that means. You know, what does a plastic surgeon do? We know that, you know, surgeons can do reconstruction. They can do aesthetic work. And, you know, Dr. LG Labraska does a lot of all that and has a beautiful training record and has been in practice now, LG, about 15 years?
14 years, Greg.
Wow, beautiful. And, LG, you've been in the Western Pennsylvania area, you know, kind of a rural area for the most part. And, you know, what kind of a practice do you have? You know, what are you doing in your practice?
Well, I've been in practice, as I said, I'm in my 14th year. My practice has evolved over the years. I've done a lot of skin cancer and breast cancer reconstruction, and I've also done lots and lots of aesthetic and cosmetic surgeries, tummy tuck, breast augmentation, breast reduction, breast lift, facelift, rhinoplasty, all kinds of those things that you see on TV.
Wonderful. And, you know, LG, with regard to the basics, you know, of what you do, you know, you're making people beautiful, but, you know, a lot of what you do has to do with wound management, tissue management, the care of very delicate parts of the body. And, you know, you're doing this, you're doing different types of flaps, bringing tissue into areas that maybe are defective. It's a very sophisticated type practice, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I tell people, and I tell other surgeons as well, whatever hole you create, I can fill it with the technology and the training that I've had. It took me 11 years of training after college just to get started.
Tremendous. Tremendous part of your life.
Yeah, I missed over an entire decade of my life because I spent it in the hospital as a medical student, as a resident. I did 4 years of medical school after regular college, and then I did 7 years of residency and fellowship after that just to get started.
Wow. And, you know, with regard to the drive, the motivation, LG, what were the things that led you into that type of a profession? to put that many years of your life in that? You know, what was the driving force? What was the goal?
So, Dr. Roscoe, the goal was simple. Whenever I was little, when I was 3, 4, 5 years old, my parents worked, and my grandmother, my dad's mom, took care of me every day before I started kindergarten. And she, the power of a grandmother is incredible. And
yeah.
So what she used to do is she would just hold my hand in her hands and she would say, "Oh, LG, you have the hands of a doctor. You need to become a doctor one day." And I said, okay, Grandma, I'll be a doctor. And then fast forward
wow.
a few years to when I was 12 years old, she developed melanoma, and it killed her within about 6 months. And
wow.
it was at that moment in time that I wanted to dedicate the rest of my life to becoming a doctor to fulfill her dream for me, and it became my dream as well. And then after I was already a medical student and already accepted into a surgery residency, I found out that plastic surgeons were also the ones who treated melanoma. And so
wow.
now I treat melanoma, and every time I do that, it's a tribute to my gram.
But that's fantastic. That's a great story. And, you know, LG, with regard to your family history, you know, where's your family come from? Were they immigrants in this country? Did Grandma come from the old country? Was Grandma born
sure.
here? You know, what was she all about?
So her family comes from Croatia. I am mostly Italian. The Nebraska side of my family came over to Ellis Island in the 19-teens. I think it was 1911 and 1913. The Nebraska boys came over, and they were my great-great-grandfather was 5'7", redhead with $20 in his pocket, and that turned into what we have right now.
Wow. What a family history. And what about
yes,
your father
I'm very
and mother,
proud of it.
Algie?
Come again?
What about your father and your mother? What was their history all about?
Sure. My dad was – he actually went to he went to college to play football. He played football for West Virginia University, and he was an education major. And just a few years out of college, he decided to go into construction, started a construction company. And my mom followed him to West Virginia University, and she became a speech pathologist. And so I grew up no doctors in
wow.
my family whatsoever.
Wow. A lot of medical – you probably had a lot of medical discussions, though, at home, right, talking about patient problems. And was Grandma there listening to all that, too?
No. Grandma died when I was 12 years old. There were no medical discussions. My dad was a contractor, and his job was
okay.
His goal for me was to make sure that I didn't become a contractor. Whenever I was like 13 or 14 years old, he took me to one of his jobs and put me up on a metal roof at 7 a.m. on a Monday morning and gave me a couple of 5-gallon buckets of tar and a bunch of brooms and told me to tar the roof of the building. And then knowing me as I did at 13, 14 years old, he took the ladder away so that I couldn't get down and I would work. And he came back around 12 o'clock with a glass of water, handed it to me because it was at that point in time, it was 95 degrees. And he gave me the glass of water and said, "Yeah, hey, if you don't get good grades in school, you can do this for the rest of your life." Point was made.
Well, what a lesson. What a lesson.
Yes, it was.
All right. Thank God you really liked the lesson and said, "Hey, Dad, I think you're right. I can do better."
His point was made.
Beautiful. Now, that's a great story. Thank you for sharing that for my listeners as well. You know, plastic
yeah,
surgeons are a real classy group of people, as you know. And, you know, LG, with regard to, you know, we talk about plastic surgery. What does that mean? You know, as far as a definition of a plastic surgeon, where do those words come from?
So plastic surgery comes from the Greek word plastikos, I didn't know you were going to ask this, but luckily I know it, which means to mold. And so we plastic surgeons, we are able to mold the body into different ways. And as I said, we're able to fill holes of the other surgeons create and other people create through trauma or other situations, cancer situations.
Sure.
And we're able to mold the body in that way.
Wow. And, you know, I think it's beautiful, you know, with regard to that, with, again, what's being done. Your services, of course, are very well needed. You know, LJ, I just got an email asking, you know, where you are, Western Pennsylvania. The listener felt that usually plastic cosmetic surgery was for, she uses the word, uber rich, uber wealthy. Is that really true? Is cosmetic surgery for just the wealthy, the people with, you know, double incomes, big professionals, business owners? LG, where does all this come from? Who gets these kind of services?
Everybody does. So I, as I said, I grew up in a pretty blue-collar family, and those are my favorite patients. Who are my patients? Teachers, nurses, people who work in restaurants, as well as people who have double income and lots of money. But it's
sure.
Funny. Taylor Swift is super, super popular these days, right?
Yeah.
I looked in this past summer, and for the cost of a tummy tuck, an abdominoplasty by me, all in, my fee, hospital, anesthesia, recovery, all of that stuff, you could get all of that, or you could get 4 Taylor Swift tickets to one show in Pittsburgh. So you, your wife, 2 kids, or a tummy tuck for your wife or your daughter or, you know, or whoever.
Sure.
So 3 hours with Taylor Swift or a lifetime of a flat tummy. I mean, seriously.
Wow.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. And, you know, just along that line, we don't want to get into money and things. But, you know, some of these surgeries, LG, one has to pay for out of pocket, so to speak, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, and that
so
means
those
that
would be
they,
your those would be your cosmetic the surgeries that you see on TV, Dr. 90210, botch those shows, your breast augmentation, breast implants, tummy tuck, facelift, eyelid lift, facelift, those things. Those are going to be your cosmetic, your out of pocket surgeries. But there are people are very creative at the ways that they pay for these days. It's
wow.
Most people don't come in with a bunch of money, cash. Some do, but most people
sure.
finance, at least where I live.
So that overall, in a sense, there's access to these types of procedures in rural America as well as in the big cities overall. These people can be taken care of and utilize your training service to make their lives better.
Yes, absolutely. I've developed a pretty good social media following over the last few years, and as such, where I'm located, my fees are significantly less than Seattle, LA, et cetera. The cost of a tummy tuck, for example, in Seattle or LA is 4 times the cost here. So people, they'll come from Seattle, they'll come from LA,
wow.
They'll come from Florida, Texas, et cetera, and they'll come to me, and they can spend a week or 2 weeks here as well as travel time, and they can either work remotely or not remotely or just take time off, and they go back to their home city or state or whatever, and they save tens of thousands of dollars just by doing that, and they still get absolutely as good a result by me as they do in the fancy places like Beverly Hills. Yeah.
Wow. That's tremendous. Honestly, that's tremendous. It's good to hear that. I want our listeners to kind of know that, you know, with regard to what you do, because I've seen your work, and it is outstanding. And it's great that there's such a margin, so to speak, for people to be able to come here to get the work and to go ahead and go on with their lives and not break the bank. You know, LG, with regard to, you know, we talk about cosmetic surgery, plastic surgery, And a lot of the interest that I've received on the emails were, what are the main reasons people want to have plastic surgery? You know, it seems pretty obvious, I would think, but are there certain reasons that people want to, maybe they're aging or things like that? You know, what are the reasons people want to have you do surgery on their body?
Well, you know, there are so many different reasons for so many different procedures. For example, the big trend right now that you see all over the place is the people that are taking the weight loss drugs, Ozempic and Mounjaro and things like that, very, very popular right now, and because they're doing amazing things for people. People are losing 100 pounds, more than 100 pounds, and they feel so much better in their bodies, but they're left with just lots and lots of loose skin, and so they
yes.
still don't feel comfortable showing their bodies off, or they're running.
No,
and
I understand.
Doing, they're more active, and their body jiggles a lot more. And so they come to someone like me who can do body contouring procedures to just remove the excess skin. There was a procedure, a patient last month who I took 21 pounds of excess tissue off just her tummy, and she absolutely feels amazing.
Oh.
Imagine taking 20 pounds just off in an afternoon and just how much better you would feel and how much more confident you would feel. I see these patients post-operatively, and they see their body for the first time, and they cry tears of joy because it's what
wow.
they've always wanted. It's what they've always felt.
Sure.
Like they see for the first time who they knew was inside.
My God. What, you know what? That has to be life-changing, LG. That has to be life-changing.
It absolutely is. I had a patient from Texas about 6 weeks or so ago, and him and her and her husband, they were the most adorable, like just cute people. They were in their early 30s, and they came in from Texas, and she had her tummy done. She had her breast done, implants and a lift. And when I took her dressing off about 5 or 6 days later for the first time, started crying tears of joy, and then he started crying and I started crying. It was
beautiful.
So great, because she just said, thank you, this is exactly what I've wanted. She had multiple children, and it left
sure.
her body pretty beat up. The what the kids
no,
do to these women's bodies is insane sometimes, and I was able to give her old, like her high school body back. And
oh my God.
And I'll never forget the reaction of both of them. It was just absolutely adorable.
And you're right. What's the price for that? You know, that's just tremendous. You know, as far as
right.
That's my God. Those are things you don't hear about, you know? And, you know, those are the people also, no doubt, LG, that are quite an advertisement for you and your practice, correct?
Yes, it absolutely is. It's funny, the marketing in some cases writes itself these days, because here in 2023, everybody is all about TikTok, and they want to tell their story on social media. So they tell their story about how they started and they came to me and what I did for them, and other people watch that and they follow that, and other people reach out to me as well, and It just keeps going.
Wow. What a spiral.
And I'm very blessed for that.
And hey, LG, how, you know, as far as when you're doing this, you know, people have great expectations of what they want to look like, no doubt, or how their breasts are, or that belly's gone. How do you meet these expectations? You know, how do you let them know that maybe I can't give you this size or that size? Or, you know, how do you handle all that? You know, what's the discussion about when you're talking about potential results?
Sure. I'm very upfront with people. I tell them what I expect, what I think I can do for them, and I tell them what I can't do for them. One of my favorite things is telling people no, because occasionally people come in with unrealistic expectations. I'll never forget a time a guy came in, and he was relatively fit. but he wanted liposuction, and he wanted to look like Mario Lopez. If you know who that is, that's the guy who was AC Slater on Saved by the Bell. Now he's on, like, I don't know, Inside Edition or one of those other shows. Just a ridiculously good-looking guy who's in great shape. And I looked at him and said, I'm sorry, I'm not your guy for that. That's just it's not possible. If anybody comes in with pictures of the Kardashians, I explain to them, no, I can't do that. I can do great things for you, but I can't do that.
You know, very good. I think that honesty is great. You know, we had done a little research with our research team, LG, on plastics. And, you know, again, just talking to people, and, you know, I mentioned about why do people want plastic surgery. And some of the reasons, of course, you've really alluded to, you know, an aging situation, that their body is changing, you know, and things just aren't as perky as they once were. And, you know, especially eyelids, breasts, you know, bellies. The big thing you hit on was losing weight, that there's a tremendous amount of people doing that now. What about scars and stretch marks? LG, are you able to change those and improve those a lot?
Sure. So let's say a woman has three babies and she has a lot of stretch marks on her abdomen, and she's a good candidate for an abdominoplasty, a tummy tuck. The stretch marks that are below the belly button are usually removed with the surgery. Anything that's stretch marks that are above the belly button are going to be moved down and stretched tighter. Now, stretch marks look nicer when they're stretched tight than when they're very loose. They just do. They just look nicer. Scars from, let's say, a cesarean section, a C-section, that is removed with a tummy tuck, for example. But I do create a new scar whenever I do a surgery. Let's say I do a tummy tuck. It's going to leave an incision in the bikini line. It's going to be covered by most bathing suits or little tiny underwear.
Okay.
But it exists. It's there, and it heals with time. Same thing for, let's say, an arm lift. It's going to leave you with an incision from the elbow to the armpit. But if someone has a lot of loose skin there, for example, they call them bingo wings or bat wings or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Those
are removed, but the scar remains. Same thing for a facelift, for example. There is an incision in front of and behind the ear on each side, as well as under the chin. But they typically heal very, very well. And one of the things that we're taught as plastic surgeon is how to hide or camouflage scars, and we tend to do a really good job with that most of the time.
Wow, so that's part of the training, and you know that visualization of that scarring we want to hide as much as we can. So you know how to do that. And you know, one of the other reasons, which you alluded to also, is copying celebrities. That you're right, people come in, and I want to look like, you know, one of the Kardashians. Absolutely. So those are maybe the tough ones that maybe they should go to another plastic surgeon?
Yes. I am not the plastic surgeon to the stars. I never wanted to be. I want to be the plastic surgeon to people who are like my neighbors and my friends. As I said earlier, I love to take care of nurses and teachers and wait staff and bartenders, as well as the people who own the restaurants and things like that as well. But those are my people. I that's who I grew up with as my friends, and that's the people that I like.
Yeah, and LG, understand where they're coming from and what their needs are and what kind of a result thereafter.
That's exactly right. I tend to be able to deliver for most everybody as long as we have a reasonable discussion ahead of time. And as I said earlier, I like to make sure that my goals and my expectations for the results of your surgery are very, very high, higher than what most people's results, expected results are. But if we're not on the same page and not close to the same page, that's just someone that I just say, hey, go ahead and you can talk to the folks down the street, and I'll be happy to take care of it if they make a mistake.
Very good. And no doubt that can happen. And, you know, LG, I just got another email. What's a Brazilian butt lift?
So that's great. So it's one of the common hot topics in plastic surgery today. Basically, as I stated earlier, people have fat in locations that they don't want. And they love to say, hey, can you take my fat from here and move it to here? The answer is typically yes. We can take fat from your thighs, from your tummy, from your back, from your arms, or whatever, and we take it out and we mix it up in a very special way, and then we can inject it into your buttocks. And
Wow.
We inject it under the skin, above the muscle layer, and that can give the desired look of a fuller butt, and that is the Brazilian butt lift. It's fat taken
Wow.
from one place and then moved to the butt. And that's a very common procedure these days.
Wow. And, LG, how long will that tissue stay in that place, if you will? Does that migrate or does that degenerate? I mean, is it something that will stay?
So that's a great question. Typically what we say is around half to maybe 60% of the tissue that we put in will stay. The other half dies because it doesn't have a blood supply. It's funny, I had a patient come in from Michigan. I think we're maybe about 6 months or so out, and she was very funny and very direct. She only wanted a small BBL, and I that's a Brazilian butt lift, BBL.
Okay, BBL,
I gave her a small Brazilian butt lift or small BBL, but in order to give her that, I had to overfill a little bit with her on her day of her surgery, knowing that we would lose a good portion of that. She came in at her 1 week post-op, and she said that it was too big, and she looked like a rapper's girlfriend. I said, it's
right.
Okay, just wait it out, wait a little bit, and then I saw her back again, and then I saw her at her six-week post-op appointment. We did a virtual appointment, and she said, okay, I admit I don't look like a rapper's girlfriend anymore.
Wow.
She did a good job, and she was very happy at that point in time.
So that time does play a factor there. And, you know, LG, I have another one here that just came in, and they want to talk about liposuction. Do surgeons still do liposuction today?
I literally do liposuction every single day. I did liposuction of a patient on Monday, Wednesday, today, two of them tomorrow. I use liposuction every day, either just simply liposuction to certain areas or as an adjunctive procedure to another procedure. So, for example, today, liposuction to the flanks and abdomen in addition to a tummy tuck. The other day, liposuction with a thigh lift. Tomorrow, liposuction with the tummy tuck. Otherwise, liposuction in guys who they have man breasts, moves, if you want to say.
Yes.
And we do liposuction to remove some of the fat there. I did a facelift on a gentleman just last week, and he got liposuction to his neck and chin area as part of that. So liposuction, we do it all the time.
Wow. So it's a pretty very important procedure, and that helps with the words I think you had used earlier were body contouring, correct?
Yes, absolutely. It's all part of it. My results are so much better when I liposuction with my tummy tuck or thigh lift or whatever as opposed to when I don't. And it's just because it allows more shape and contour definition. It's all about creating subtle curves, subtle definition to give people the best result that I can possibly give them.
Very good. And, LG, you know, as far as, say, again, doing some of these things, you know, are the procedures, are they semi-permanent? Are they permanent? You know, someone does get your body contouring. They get the liposuctioning. You know, what are the do's and don'ts with regard to care of their body, maintaining these things so they keep that beautiful appearance that you gave them?
Sure. Basically, you want to, for when we're talking about an abdominoplasty or a tummy tuck, you want to make sure that you get your tummy tuck after you're done having kids. Now, I did about a year or so ago, I did a tummy tuck on a woman who had basically she had a tummy tuck, and then the story goes her husband had a vasectomy, yada, yada, yada. She got pregnant with twins after that, so the vasectomy, I guess, didn't take. And then she raised the kids for a few years, and then she needed another tummy tuck because, well, twins will do that to you. Same thing if you go and you have if you have a facelift and you either gain or lose 30 or 50 pounds or whatever, your results are not going to be the same. Basically, if you're able to keep a reasonable weight, within, I mean, 10, 15 pounds of your goal weight for your surgery, your results are going to last a very, very long time. Now, let's say you go ahead and you get an eyelid lift called a blepharoplasty at 45 or 55 and you live another 30 or 40 years. Is it reasonable to think that you're going to have extra eyelid skin again? Of course it is. It absolutely is.
Beautiful. And so that's the truth. You know, with regard to just, say, people thinking about plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery, and I want to get into more reconstructive in the next half hour, is that overall it's something that they need to take care of themselves, but they maybe need to keep your number because down the road there may be some things changing. You might need to go in and do a little touch-up work to maintain their beauty. So it's something they may need, you know, down the road, and coming back to the same guy that did it the first time may be a good way to do it.
Yes, absolutely. Some of these things are not necessarily lifetime things, but they can last a very, very long time. I'm going to be in practice hopefully another 20 years or so. So the folks that I'm operating on today, I'll be available for them again in 15 or 20 years. Or their kids. Who knows?
Excellent. You know, we're going to go to the studio in L.A. Mark Mancini has a lot of questions and comments. So, Dr. Labraska, would you mind if we took a couple of questions now?
Absolutely. Sounds great.
Good. Mr. Mancini, what do you have in the studio?
Okay, my friend, as I answered that first question earlier, as I hit the board before you started the show, it's nice and warm out here, and I feel for you guys out there in Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Mark.
We can get into the weather on another show, but I know this show, man, it just picks up steam and it goes by so fast. So let me get to some of these comments. Sheila from Boulder, Colorado, listening. She says, guys, if does breast sag after the reconstructive surgery? That's a nice question.
Dr. Labraska?
She has a breast sag after reconstructive surgery. This sounds like someone who maybe had a breast cancer and had a reconstruction, and it is very possible that over time the results, they didn't stay quite as well as she had hoped, and a revisionary surgery is totally reasonable. In certain cases, it's hard to say specifically what she had done or what her history was, but breast reconstruction surgery, the revision rate is higher than it is in someone that has a cosmetic surgery procedure. And that just goes along with having cancer and other things.
And LG, you know, if someone has heavier or larger breasts, is that something, if they have like a reduction, that they may still have some sagging problems down the road because of the quality of the tissues?
Well, it depends on a lot of factors: the age of the patient, the size of the breast before surgery, the size of the breast after surgery. But it is possible to need a revision with that. What is the revision rate, let's say 5 and 10 years down the road after a after a breast reduction surgery? Some very small number, 2-3%. Most of these folks do very, very well, and the results can last a very, very long time.
Very good. All right, Mark, what do you have next?
Well, let me get Dalen from Chelmsford, Mass. It always chimes in. He said, what is mastectomy reconstruction? Wow.
Sure, that's
mastectomy.
A mastectomy is removal of a breast. That's going to be done two reasons. Typically, in 99% of the time, we're going to be talking about cancer reconstruction. The other time would be for a transgender person going from a female to male. But in this case, you're going to typically talk about mastectomy reconstruction, where someone has a cancer that is removed by a breast surgeon. And then reconstruction is going to be done by someone like myself, a board-certified plastic surgeon. And there are a couple of different ways to do that. We can get into that now, or we can get into it later. We can maybe even get into it next week, because I hear I'm coming back next week as well.
I would like to put that off till next week, if you don't mind. We have a lot of questions, LG. Go ahead, Mark.
Sounds great. Yeah.
Let me take one more. Gail coming in from Clearwater, an avid listener of your show, Dr. Greg Roscoe, and she goes, how long does it take for somebody to go braless after breast reconstruction?
So typically, it's a trick question because, again, it depends where you are after reconstruction. If you have a B-cup breast, you can be braless in a couple of months or whatever, and stay braless for a very long time. If you go to a larger breast, it's going to take a longer time before you're braless. And typically, the larger the breast, the more necessary it is to wear a bra. Those things they weren't created either by a surgeon or by God himself to not need a bra.
Okay.
Right.
So that's something that she would have to talk to her surgeon about, and overall depends on many personal factors as to going braless. Beautiful. Do you have anything else, Mark?
Yeah, let me take one more, and it's coming out of Torrey Pines, California. Deborah says, how much is breast reconstruction surgery cost? Does it depend on the state you're in? Wow, that's an interesting one. Then I'll give it back
to you guys. Breast reconstruction is going to go through your insurance. So that's going to be solely and completely based on your insurance plan. Now, it costs way more now than it did 5 and 10 years ago because, as we know, insurance is super, super expensive now. Deductibles are ridiculously high, and the insurance companies they're not your friends.
No.
But that's a whole nother story. We could spend hours talking about how the insurance companies put the screws to you. But the short answer to that is that's going to go under your insurance. Your insurance only.
Beautiful. Yeah, if I can, Mark, thank you. ILD, thanks for answering those questions. We have some more that are coming as well. We're getting lateness into our hour here. LG, I wanted to talk a little bit, very basically, we're dealing with tissue. You're dealing with many basic factors in our tissues. You know, with reconstruction, which is the topic for we have a few minutes to talk about it, what is this reconstruction all about? What are you using when you mentioned surgeons make a hole and you can fix it? What are you talking about? How are you filling this hole? I know you do flaps and things like that. Do you want to talk a little bit for our listeners to realize how intricate this is when you're doing reconstruction and generating flaps to fill defects? Can you expand on that a little bit, LG?
Sure. So It's a little bit tricky to describe. However, basically, let's say you have a skin cancer on your back. The removal of that skin cancer creates a hole. And then it's my job to fill that hole. Sometimes it can be very, very large, several inches in diameter, and you just can't just pull the tissue together without significant issues. And so we have to create geometric patterns that are going to close that with the least amount of tension. Or if someone has a large skin cancer on, let's say, the top of their head, the skull is directly underneath that. And so we have to use very intricate zigzag patterns and moving tissue from one location to another to get that closed. Because if you have a hole on your head and you're looking at a skull, that doesn't close very well. If it's on the face, we want to do it in a way that's going to, again, create a scar that is less easy to be seen, less
sure.
easily seen than
oh yeah,
from the regular person than as opposed to what it would be like if a non-plastic surgeon just whip-stitch closed it up, or an ER doctor after a trauma.
Sure.
My training allows me to do a much better job at that.
And, Algie, you know, as far as the things that you would use, you know, your science skills here, you're talking about a flap of tissue that has good blood supply, that you're, again, your zigzag, that you could rotate into a defect or a hole, correct? And you're concerned about what's the blood flow here? We've got to make sure there's an artery, there's a vein. Am I correct in understanding what you do?
Yes, very well said. Basically, moving skin around and moving tissue around, it has to survive. We can move any amount of tissue around if we want. But if the tissue doesn't survive, then we've not done a good job for ourselves or most specifically our patients. And so our anatomy, our anatomic
yeah.
knowledge is very deep and specific for different types of skin, which has mostly a random blood supply, but all the way even down to moving muscles from one place to another to fill defects. And the different muscles have different blood supply, and part of our extensive training is to learn what is the blood supply for each muscle that we would consider using to fill a defect.
Sure.
My very first day as a plastic surgery resident, it was 2008, and we went in, and there was a gentleman who had a melanoma to his eyeball. And it was a recurrent, and basically ENT, like yourself, Dr. Roscoe, went in and removed a large portion of the patient's face, his ear. They took his eyeball out. It was very aggressive. He was 44 years old. He had three young daughters, and he wanted to live as long as he possibly could for them. And so we had that hole that we had to fill. And we took a skin, fat, and muscle from his back, completely removed it from his body, and then did a microscopic microsurgery to suture it to an artery in his neck so that it would live,
oh my.
So that blood supply, that tissue would live. And then we filled the hole like you created, and it lived, and he did very well for a couple of years. He did eventually succumb to his melanoma, but he had longer time
wow.
with his young daughters.
But
and that was my first day.
Wow. I mean, that's a tremendous success story as well. The things that, and I want our listeners to get the scope, you know, of what you do as a plastic surgeon, and again, with these flaps. And, you know, you're right. There's that free tissue flap, and then there's also skin grafts that you do also. You're taking skin and placing it in different areas, correct?
Yes. So basically, if you have a superficial wound that is just through a small portion of the skin, or of the face or the top of the head or whatever, we can remove a thin layer of skin and lay it over top of the defect and close it that way. It's not a very pretty way of doing things, but this is well-versed in burn patients, for example. Burned skin doesn't do very well and has to be removed, and then we take skin from other parts of the body and place it on the burned tissue, and that allows us to essentially close that wound with the skin graft.
Yeah, and you know, I know that you know the questions are you know are very easy for you to answer, but I think our listeners are not aware of the scope and training and the serious type things you do, in addition, of course, to all the cosmetic procedures. And, you know, do most surgeons do the amount of, like, reconstructive work as well as cosmetic work as you do being in a more rural community? Or do you find that, you know, they specialize into just doing boobs or doing faces or doing abdominoplasties? You know, what do they seem to do, LG? How do they tailor their practices? Because you still do a lot of different things, correct?
So I have the most fun job in the entire world, Greg. I do what I want, and what I want is to take care of patients in whatever way possible. There are plastic surgeons who do nothing but cosmetic stuff. There are plastic surgeons who do nothing but reconstructive stuff. I love to do both, and I get to take care of, as I said before, my neighbors, the people that I
sure.
grew up with. I moved back to my hometown after I finished, and I'm very proud of that. And I've been able to create a practice from scratch, and it's turned into a very successful practice, and I'm very happy. On a Monday morning, most folks, they wake up and they groan, and they say, oh, my God, I have to go to work today. I wake up on Monday morning with a smile on my face because I get to go to work, and I get to take care of my patients every Monday morning, and it's
wow.
It's truly a blessing that not everybody gets.
Well, thank God. You know, thank God he found you. Thank God you found what you want to do in your life. And, you know, what about hand work? You also do some hand work. Am I correct?
Yep, that's right. There's several different types of hand surgery. Some of that is trauma, so you go and you get your hand crushed in something,
okay.
or in a you get bitten by a dog, or you get your finger torn off here or there or whatever. And then those are all traumatic, and that's an on the fly thing. But we also do things that are more chronic, like ganglion cysts, which is just a little cyst that's formed like on the wrist or the finger, or carpal tunnel surgery, or arthritis surgery, trigger fingers, for example. All that's very, very common, run-of-the-mill, basic stuff for most plastic surgeons, but it's great for the patients. Did I lose you? Well, I sure hope I didn't, but otherwise, I guess I'll just keep talking because I might be the only one here. Dr. Roscoe, hello. You know, these things are unscripted, ladies and gentlemen.
He should be back, huh?
Are we back?
Back
yet?
On. We had a little technical difficulty.
Yep. You know, these shows are unscripted. We do this on the fly, and technical difficulties happen for sure.
Thank you. I am back, and I'm sorry I missed those comments. And are we taking more questions? Thank you. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, let me get a couple more out of here. Two more, and then we'll get a summary of this to preview next week. Steve from Corvallis, Oregon says, Guys, I can lend an ear. You guys have a great show each and every week. Keep up the great work. I'm an avid listener. That's Steve from Corvallis, Oregon. And
thanks,
the other one that, yeah, he's a great one. Albert coming in from Peoria, not Albert, Kenneth from Peoria, Arizona, comes in each week and listens to the show. And he says Botox on women as they get older, does that more or less ruin them? Because he's noticed a couple people in his family, cousins or something, that have got that, and they just seem like it's much more, the lips are bigger and everything. Or is that a story for next week, guys?
Well, if you have 2 minutes, I can tell you all about it. Botox is a potent neurotoxin. It acts where nerve enters muscle, causing muscle to not be able to contract. And it's not going to ruin you. It's absolutely a transformative, amazing, minimally invasive procedure that we do in the office every single day. And basically, folks that have wrinkles all over, that, let's say, their forehead or the area between their eyebrows or their crow's feet or whatever, a little hit of Botox every few months there, and it can take years and years off of your face. It's truly wonderful. The bigger lips thing that he's talking about, that's dermal filler. And basically what that is, it's a protein that we already have in our body called hyaluronic acid that we inject in there, and it adds a small amount of volume to the lip. Can it be done poorly? Of course it can. But if you go to someone who's an expert like myself, I'm happy to tell people, no, I won't put more stuff into your lips. So I like to keep it natural.
That's an office procedure, correct?
Correct. That's done with under either no anesthetic or topical anesthetic or even an ice cube.
Oh, wow. And are we talking it's a 10, 15, 20-minute ordeal for them to have that done?
That's exactly right. Yep, very, very simple, very easy. Can be done on your lunch break or before you go into work or after work. With minimal to no downtime. Very, very easy. It's done hundreds of thousands of times to millions of times per year here in the United States alone.
Yeah, and where did all that come from, by the way? Who invented the Botox for cosmetic surgery?
So Botox was invented for other reasons, and it transitioned into cosmetic surgery. Botox is actually a very mild form of botulism. And what it does, botulism is a paralytic disease. And the Botox itself is very spun down, very small version that's injected directly into the face. And it causes a little bit of paralysis of very tiny muscles for a few months and makes you look better.
And it's something overall that the average people can have this done, correct? That's the people that are
everybody,
in your community.
I tell folks, you can't have a group of five women in the United States that are in their anywhere between their mid to late 20s to mid to late 60s. One of those five women definitely has Botox.
This one's
the youngest looking one.
Wow. Mark,
can I take
wonderful.
One more comment? Well, let me take one more comment, and then we'll summarize it because we're going to run out of time. But Joey from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, basically says he knew a girl he was close with that had to build bigger breasts, and they started leaking after a while, caused her a lot of inner problems and stuff. What causes the leakage, he says? Is it just after a while it just kind of, demoralizes?
Sure. So let's I'll try to be as brief as I can. The implants that are out today, they were the silicone implants that were approved in 2006 are not your mother's and your grandmother's breast implants. There's lots of videos of those being cut in half, and the tissue, the stuff inside doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't travel to other areas of your body and cause sickness or anything like that. So that's probably not what he's talking about.
Healthier.
The other thing could be saline breast implants. Those are filled with essentially salt water. And if one of those ruptures, it just goes away and you have one breast that's full size and the other one is empty of fluid, and it's very easy to tell when that happens, and the saline just goes away and it's no big deal. It just gets absorbed. The thing he may have been talking about would be what I like to describe as your mother or your grandmother's breast implants that were around in the 70s, 80s, and into 1991 before they were taken off the market. And essentially, the shell of the implant had bigger holes in it. Now we're talking microscopic holes, but bigger holes in it than the silicone inside, which was more liquid. And over time, 10 years or so, some of the liquid could leak out into the capsule. And we found out it didn't really go anywhere either. But Connie Chung, if you remember her, she did an investigative report, and essentially based on those findings and the national media caused the implants to be taken off the market, and they were taken off until 2006. But I guess it was a good thing because the implants that are around now are much, much better than those implants.
Beautiful. Thank you for all that, LG. You know, Mark, I'm going to summarize it if you don't mind.
Okay.
And then talk about next week. You know, thank you. You know, we brought on Dr. Labraska to talk about plastic surgery, reconstruction. You know, what are the trends? What does he do? What are the multiplicity of things that he does? And, you know, leading up to next week, and I wanted to bring, again, our breast surgeon on, Kelly Smith, to talk about breast cancer, removing breast cancer, and then having Dr. Labraska talk about who should be reconstructed, who should not be reconstructed. You know, what's the why? And there are cases they don't reconstruct, and we're not going to talk about that now. We'll bring that on next week, and that'll be Dr. Kelly Smith and Dr. LG Labraska bringing information to our listeners. So, Mark, we had a lot about plastic surgery, what the scope of the field is, you know, what he does, how sophisticated it is, and what kind of great results he gets. And I think you were an excellent guest, Dr. Labraska, and I think Mark may ask, but how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah.
How can folks get a hold of me? They can get a hold of me through my website, drlabraska.com. It's drlabraska.com. You can find me on Instagram at Dr. Labraska, TikTok at Dr.Labraska, or you can find me on Facebook at Dr. Labraska.
Wonderful. And my email is ggrmd308@outlook.com. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, as we wrap this up, I can't wait for next week when Dr. Labraska comes back along with Kelly Smith, and that should be a dandy part two of this discussion, as it's been a loaded show today. I can't wait to see what next week brings us. For Dr. Greg Roscoe and Dr. Algie Labraska out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, stay warm, guys. Yours truly, Mark Mancini out of Los Angeles, producing it. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to the podcast, powered now by Mancini Media. Have a blessed weekend. We'll talk to you next week along these same stations.
Thank you, listeners.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark Mancini. Good night.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks.